Welcome to Two Teas in a Pod. I'm Kate Diaz, a Manchester math teacher and elected president of CEA, the Connecticut Education Association. We are Connecticut's largest teachers union, representing tens of thousands of professional educators across the state.
And I'm Jocelyn Delancey, a fifth grade teacher in Darien, elected vice president of CEA and president of CEF, the Connecticut Education Foundation, CEA's charitable arm.
In every episode, you'll hear thought-provoking interviews, as well as actionable tips and strategies that you can implement in your daily life. We'll have stimulating discussions to help you become a more informed and effective educator and advocate for your students and the teaching profession.
Thanks for spending some time with us today. Now let's jump right into Two Teas in a Pod.
We are so excited because we have Congressman John Larson, who is off of a beautiful victory very recently. And we are also joined by Sue Strader, a teacher in Preston. And we are really excited to talk about Social Security, which nobody really gets ever excited to talk about sometimes, which is unfortunate. But what we know is that our teachers are disadvantaged seriously with Social Security. There are two provisions, the government pension offset and the windfall employment provision, right? Am I getting that right?
Elimination.
It's
easy to.
I know. We always call it GPO WEP, and so it's easy to forget. But oftentimes people forget about what the impact it is. And ultimately for us as teachers, and Sue, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, it basically serves right now as a penalty for being an educator.
Definitely. And when you are a career changer like I was, it's kind of double jeopardy. You want to be into this wonderful profession because of the passion you have for it and the interest that you have for it. And then you get into it and realize, oh, all that work I did in corporate America now goes away. All that money I put in now goes away.
Right. Or
when I try to retire.
Right. And that also impacts people who work a second job.
Correct.
Which is literally everyone.
Every teacher. Of
all
course.
Of them.
Every teacher exactly. Works a second job. And we do contribute. So it's a kind of a misconception that we don't contribute to Social Security.
Right.
Because Social Security is taken out of our stipends. And most of us have to work second jobs.
Right.
And
right.
Social Security is taken out.
Yeah, so we're not freeloaders, because people do like to throw that term around, too, very unfairly.
Well, and I think I want to just make sure everybody listening knows that the issue with these provisions is that they are not nationwide provisions. They
right.
only impact educators in specific states, but the switch and change has to be made at the federal level. We need to make a change with Social Security
right.
federally in order to help support teachers and other professionals in the state.
Which is great for us to have Congressman Larson here today, because no one has stood up stronger and more aggressively for Social Security than you have. And I think that this is a real moment of opportunity. So talk to us about what your plan is.
Well, first and foremost, thank you. And great to be on this podcast with you. I think this is one of the more misunderstood pieces of legislation and its impact. I'm so proud that the president came out early on and said, look, Social Security is a sacred trust, and it is unconscionable that not only teachers, but firefighters, police officers, municipal employees are impacted by a bill that was passed years ago that penalizes. They were at the time thinking they were fixing a problem, but what they did is only further compound a problem.
Right.
Which is no fault of the individual teacher or police officer or the firefighter. They didn't negotiate this. But by the same token, why should people who have paid into a system, this is an earned benefit, not rightfully receive that? And equally as important, or their spouses as well.
Right.
So teachers have been doubly harmed by this. It's long overdue that it's corrected. I'm glad that Social Security 2100, a sacred trust, has the president's proposal to eliminate WEP and GPO from the law, thereby making sure that people who've worked, you know, as teachers and have, I was a former teacher, I had two part-time jobs, you know, to make ends meet. And I think that it's unconscionable that if you've paid into the system, that you shouldn't be able to receive the money that you've paid into back. You didn't negotiate. Teachers didn't negotiate a contract with states or municipalities.
Right.
That was a part of the state's doing. You just happened to be employees.
Right. And I think the hard part is, you know, a lot of this was negotiated so long ago. And from my understanding is it was all done when our wages were ridiculously oppressed. They were really low. So they were looking at teachers making $10,000 a year. And they were like, well, you have a pension and you're paying into that. We're not going to have you pay into Social Security. And they thought they were doing us a favor because our pension was generous. Our wages were low. Paying into two pension systems. They were like, oh no, that's not fair. But what it lacked was a whole lot of foresight about what this was going to look like moving forward. So here we are, you know, 50 years later, trying to unwind this and go, okay, wait a minute. Now, not only don't I get my Social Security, I don't collect my husband's. I have worked a part-time job my entire career, and I have made contributions to Social Security since I was 16, and I'm never going to see a penny of those at this point unless we can get some action.
Well, we're going to get action, and I think the other point that needs to be made here is that this was a conscious choice on a number of states,
right?
Not the individual teacher.
Right.
But on the states. Why? Because they didn't want to pay their half.
Correct.
To the government. Instead, what they did is negotiate a separate pension.
Mm-hmm.
But the people who get hurt are the very individuals they were trying to help. And the old saying, you know, thanks, but no thanks. Oh, you're better off with this, et cetera. No, you're not. You're entitled to what you paid into the program. That's how it was intended to work.
Right.
And I think the reduction that we do get, the calculation is skewed. It was always government employees that these things were impacted. The laws were all about government employees. But private sector, you can collect a pension and Social Security. You contribute to both, but they can collect both with no penalty, where we're getting penalized because we're considered government workers. And during COVID, we were considered essential workers, but yet teachers have not seen any benefit from the state or federal government to thank us for that service. And this Social Security on top of it, the reduction in our benefit, and there's so many other things that we fall into this one category when you want to take away, but we don't seem to fall into the category when you want to give.
Right.
The good news is it comes at a time that, especially when you look at both a global pandemic and the supply chain issues that emanated from that, the ensuing global inflation that's taken hold, add to that the largest land war in Europe in 75 years disrupting oil supplies and wheat supplies, has only exacerbated the problem of both the pandemic, who impacts people over age 65 the greatest, and inflation that hurts people on fixed incomes. And so Congress hasn't done anything, and this includes all states,
right?
In 51 years. And so along with WEP and GPO, I think the important thing is that Social Security in general, including, and I'm here with three women today, making sure that people who were in the workforce, who were caregivers, and who also were earning salaries that were not the equivalent of their male counterparts, they get a de minimis check from the government. We're out to change a couple of things. Number one, no one can ever retire into poverty again after having worked all their lives and contributing to the system.
Here. Exactly.
Number two, we're going to have a COLA that actually reflects what the cost of living is for retirees. And by that meaning, and this is a AARP kind of design, but what we added to it is whichever is greater. For example, in a pandemic like this where people are going to receive an increase of about 8.7% this January, much needed and welcome, but that always haven't been the case.
Right.
And of course, this pandemic is what caused that to go up. But typically, people go under our current CPI formula. There's years where there was nothing received or a de minimis amount of money received. That's now all going to change under this bill so that you get the greater of the two, whether it's pandemic or health related, or whether it's the actual things that seniors spend money on, including pharmaceuticals, trips to the grocery store, heating and cooling your home, et cetera, putting gasoline in your tank. And all, remember this, Congress hasn't done anything in 51 years.
That is a very long time to
ignore
this issue.
Nixon was president of the United States.
Oh, goodness.
A loaf of bread costs 72 cents. That's why this is so vitally important and why the vote has to be taken now. Some are saying, well, Social Security is still solvent through 2034. That is true. But if nothing is done, and only Congress can do that, there will be a 20% reduction. And if the Republicans had their way between Rick Scott of Florida's proposal, between Senator Johnson's proposal, and the Republican Study Committee, they proposed cutting, privatizing, and ending Social Security. How in God's name that helps out anyone is beyond me, and it's long overdue that we do what we're elected to Congress for, and that's vote. And I hope every teacher and municipal employee is out there saying, look, all we're asking for you is to vote. If you disagree and you got a better plan, put it on the table. We're more than happy to vote on that. But for God's sake, vote.
Let's talk about that for a minute, because we're entering into what we lovingly refer to as the lame duck session. Mm-hmm. All right, as of today, on our podcast, we don't actually know what the layout of this is going to look like. However, it's far more competitive than we thought, which is very exciting, because it means that we have a lot of voices still at the table that are really going to be advocates of the issues that are important to our teachers. What do you think is the best strategy going into this session in terms of moving this issue forward?
You're right about the lame duck, I think aptly named, but also because this is the current sitting members of Congress that will vote. Mm-hmm. So this is the time to raise these issues and put it forward, including the Republican proposal to hold the debt ceiling hostage so they can make cuts to Social Security. So I think on two fronts. Number one, passing the debt ceiling so that it can't be held hostage to extract cuts should things work out that the Republicans are in charge of either the Senate or the House or both. So that will be a focus, along with, right now, government's operating under a continuing resolution. And there are a number of proposals led by Rosa DeLauro, et cetera, on appropriations to make sure that we get the budget done and passed into next year. And that is going to be beneficial to a number of our municipalities as well as a number of states. And, of course, also taking up Social Security, because this way everybody will get to plainly see where their members stand and what happens.
Get away from lip service and into a vote.
An actual vote. Imagine that. Imagine calling upon your elected officials to vote.
That's amazing.
That is amazing. How dare you ask them to actually vote?
I feel like we're being very unreasonable, right? Like,
how about this? I think this would astound most Americans to know this, but as a former history teacher, I'd love to bring this up. How many current votes just in the last 22 months has the House passed but the Senate not taken up?
I would imagine all of them.
Probably a lot. I don't know a number.
Over 547 bills, 70% of which are bipartisanly adopted, have never been taken up by the Senate because of what they call the cloture vote or Rule 22, often referred to as the filibuster.
The filibuster,
But it's, imagine that the primary reason you're elected is to represent your people and vote. And the reason you vote is because there's accountability and people get to see.
What do you stand for?
What do you stand for?
And it matters, because if I think about some of the times that, like, really pivotal things have come before, you know, the House and the Senate, I absolutely. I not only watch what my people have done, but I do pay attention to the other, you know, notable legislators and how they're voting. And you're absolutely right. You know, the fact that we have paralysis of decision making holds all of us hostage in terms of our ability to move our issues forward, to get things really corrected. Yep. So, you know, we look at our teachers and they're frequently talking, like Sue talked about, the impact of this, the fact that it's holding people back from joining our profession because they don't want to be financially penalized for becoming a teacher. Same thing is true with other municipal workers who are, you know, impacted this way. If I have my choice, do I take a job that's going to financially penalize me, or do I take another job? And so you sit here and the helplessness that we often feel, because we come up to, we have great state advocacy, and we've done a really good job at the state level of trying to bring teacher issues forward, of trying to be vocal and present and in all the conversations. And this is the elusive one, because as we have this conversation, we go to the federal kind of level, and we talk to our delegation in Connecticut. We're, you know, we're very fortunate. Not only have you been supportive, but the entire delegation, when we were there in September lobbying, it was like, and we got you on this, right? And they're like, yeah, John already hooked us up. Don't worry, Kate.
Well, you know, and you're right to point out as well. And Dick Blumenthal is the lead sponsor of this bill, along with Chris Van Hollen in the United States Senate.
Yep.
And there are all there are other proposals, mm-hmm. but none of which contain as expansive relief as Social Security 2100, a sacred trust, does.
Right.
Including even in Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders' bill, there's no repeal of weapon GPO.
Right. And if it doesn't repeal it,
then we're not interested.
We're out.
it's because that impacts, you know, 2.7 million Americans. That's a large number of Americans that are impacted by that. And so, you know, it's incumbent upon us to make those changes and also pay for it. And this is the other thing I like. They said, well, how do you pay for that bill? I said, well, we lift the cap on people making over $400,000. You know, that represents 0.6% of the American people. But imagine they stop paying into the system almost on day one.
Right.
And so a person making $30,000 to $50,000 is paying in
their whole life.
Time. So, and even lifting the cap, right, proportionately, they're still paying less than an individual making $30,000 to $50,000. So we think it's both fair in a way to address the issue and enhance benefits, including a tax cut for people. Most teachers and everybody else held a second job, and even in retirement, they have another job.
Right.
And then
they find that you're being
taxed on your Social Security benefits. This bill repeals that so that there's 23 million people that would be advantaged by that. No one will be able to retire into poverty. A COLA that works. Repeal of WEP and GPO. Eliminating the waiting period on disability. And that's another thing people don't understand. I mean, Social Security is not just a pension.
Right.
It's spousal and dependent coverage, as well as disability coverage. And more veterans rely on Social Security disability than they do on the VA. It's the nation's number one insurance program. It's also the most efficient and effective governmental program that we have. It operates under what they call a 99% loss ratio. That's insurance language. Here's what it means. They operate all of Social Security for the 65 million people that are on it and the 182 participants with under 1% administrative costs. Now, that's efficiency in government. And Social Security, in fact, needs a greater infusion of capital in these days so that we can only further enhance their service to the public. And it will still be under 1%. No private sector insurance company can even remotely come close to that 99% ratio that Social Security delivers. So why Republicans aren't joining with us in saying we should be exalting the fact that we have a system that takes care of, you know, the number one anti-poverty program for seniors, number one anti-poverty program for children, Social Security.
I want to know everybody's kind of last thought on this, because we have had a lot of things thrown out. There's obviously our own concerns with retention, recruitment. There's how do we advocate? What are our next steps? And the importance and significance of this effort. So I'm going to give everybody a final word. Sue, what's your final word on this?
I really want to go back to the recruitment piece of it. And sure. I know we've talked about, but it's a nationwide problem for teachers to come into the field. And I think if our legislators understand that that's a big piece to the puzzle of correcting some of this, we could then recruit people who may have been displaced during COVID.
For other workers, yeah.
For other workers that would come into education, but because of these laws that are in place, choose not to because it's an impact financially. And I think that's a big storehouse of workers that we could pull into the profession. And also adjusting internally our retirement numbers, because as a career changer, that is the other piece to the puzzle.
Right.
I can't teach as long because of my age as I need to get the most benefit from my pension.
Right.
So I only get a very small, like 12%,
right,
because I can't make it to 20 years because I would be not too old, but I would be older than I want to be teaching in a classroom. Let's put
it that way.
I'm not going to be too old, but I'm going to be, at retirement.
Where you'd like to retire.
Yes.
Fair. So recruitment and bring in those second careers.
Right.
Jocelyn, what's your final word?
I just think the urgency of getting this done and getting it done now can't be forgotten, right? We have an opportunity to get this done, and the impact that this has on the people in our country who have given, they educate our children, they keep us safe, they protect our rights and our nation. These are the people we're talking about who are impacted the most by this, and they're the ones who need the most support and help. And so I think any person in Congress thinking that this isn't an issue worth taking up, just imploring that the urgency of this is pretty tremendous.
And Congressman, what's your final word?
Well, completely agree with both Jocelyn and Susan in their comments, and also, would add, it's been 51 years since Congress has done anything to enhance the program. And we hear the other side saying, people are living longer, so therefore we should raise the age. For every year you raise the age, that's a 7% cut in benefits. That's how they balanced Social Security back in 1983. Ronald Reagan was president. Bob Dole led it in the Senate. And Tip O'Neill held on to make sure that there weren't severe cuts, but they did it. And the final number just went into effect this last January. The age is now 67 for retirement. Think about this. And here's their logic. Well, people are living longer. Therefore, we ought to have them wait to get a benefit. That is not the case for all Americans. And depending upon where you work, et cetera, it doesn't make any sense. And if you are living longer, how does it make any sense at all that you should be receiving less? And it's your government's responsibility that it hasn't acted on in 51 years. This is nothing the president can do through executive order. There's nothing that the Supreme Court is going to act on. But Congress has bills in front of it now, and they need to vote. Jocelyn's right. The fierce urgency of now is this pandemic and this inflationary period that impacts the very people we're talking about and trying to help. That's why we need a vote. That's why people have to know where their member of the House and Senate stand with respect to enhancing Social Security, something that hasn't been done in 51 years.
So I'm going to thank our guests here today, Sue, for giving us a real personal perspective, and Congressman, you for reminding us that we are not a hopeless cause by any stretch of the imagination, and we hope that our members keep their eyes and ears open for our moment of activism when we can support the push and we can help get this done and voted on. Thank you very much, and we look forward to continuing to fight the good fight.
Thanks, guys.
We want to thank all of our members for all you do and for listening to the latest edition of Two Teas in a Pod.
For more education talk, subscribe to Two Teas in a Pod and find us at CEA.org/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like what you heard? Share a podcast with your friends and colleagues and spread the word, because we are
stronger together.